Right, the Mountain Bike Podcast, episode number one. This is brand new to GMBN, something we're going to be doing a lot of Mondays after the big races of the year. So it's going to be a casual chat with the experts of mountain biking about those biggest and best races on the planet and more. And this kicks off with the very first World Cup downhill race of the year. How's this going to be different to the Dirt Shell? Well, it's going to be a raw show, also to be released as a podcast on your favourite podcast provider. So you can listen at your leisure as well as find them on the GMBN YouTube. Expect the show the Monday after every big race of the year, World Cup Downhill, World Cup Cross Country and the Enduro World Series. We'll be getting the opinions of the experts, co-hosts in the studio, interviews of the pros and arguments with the hosts over their favourite riders. Expect everyone here at GMBN to be involved. I'm hosting the first show as an ex-World Cup Downhill racer. I'm stoked to be doing it. When it comes to World Cup Cross Country, we'll be asking the professionals to give their insights from those ex-pro cross country racers. So it's going to be available on Spotify, Google and iTunes eventually. That will take a few days. And today I'm joined in the studio by a co-host, Steve Jones. So you're an expert on World Cup Downhill. You wrote a book about it, 25 years of World Cup Downhill. A journalist of many years, an Aaron Gwynn fanboy and an EMBN presenter.
Yeah, I mean, Don, it's what we wait for, right? It's World Cup Downhill. It's so compelling. It's, you know, all these riders, they walk in a tightrope.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's pretty much a bit in between like free climbing and climbing the ropes. You know, you cannot make any errors. And
yeah.
And so it panned out at Maribor, the first World Cup of 2019.
Yeah, like, I still get super excited about this. Yeah. I mean, it's been 9-10 years, I think, since I raced World Cup Downhill. But now I'm like... big fanboy of the races. Can't wait to see it.
Actually, wasn't Maribor your last World Cup?
It was. I didn't want to talk about that, Steve. I have some bittersweet memories from Maribor. I've got some brilliant memories from it. I love the place, love the track, especially going back to those old school versions. I raced my first season, 2000, and it was one of those big alpine, amazing fun tracks to ride. I'd seen it on the videos, showed up there, absolutely loved it. But also, my last ever World Cup, I punched in qualifying, called it a day, that was it.
Oh, dear. But yeah, going back to track, I mean, it is a hell of a track, right?
Yeah.
It's got, I don't know, it's got, what, 80 to 100 corners, it's got it's got rocks. For me, it's a perfect downhill World Cup Downhill track.
Many of those sections are still the same. That rock garden. I think the first year I did it, you started from the top of the hill. I remember seeing, do you remember Timo going over the bars and that big, one of the biggest over the bars ever, hitting that big soft jump and going over.
Yeah, and a fellow Shropshire colleague of yours, Kate Bircham, broke both wrists off one of the jumps.
Is that right? I don't remember that.
But I think one of the biggest crashes of Maribor was Josh Briceland when down to the rock garden.
Do you remember him, super skinny? He was quite, well, I wasn't young, but he was skinny, that big black Bell motocross helmet, and he missed the sort of skinny bit of the rocks, went off the side, went down.
Crikey. But you know what? What strikes me is every single time, you know, you've got World Cup Downhill racing, and you've got a human element, and you've got a mechanical element.
Yeah.
This year, you know, you look at the bikes, different wheel sizes, different components.
Yeah.
And then you've got the human element, different rider weights, different strategies, different line choices, and it all comes down to the top five, which is separated by 1.5 seconds.
Is it that close?
Mental.
Well, let's get into the bike. So pre-season, there's always a lot of chat. We're just 2019, we're still talking about wheel sizes.
Yeah.
On 29ers, I made a little list. We've got Gwynn riding his brand new Intense M29.
Yeah.
Pirion, Conor Fearon, that Kona. The Athertons, of course, brand new bike, 29er. Most of common style, not all of them. YT, Angel Suarez. Yeah. And Mark Wallace, who went on to qualify fastest. We had a bit of a WhatsApp group before the race, and I said, if Mark Wallace wins this race, I'll eat my hat.
And I said, I'd eat your car.
Which is no disrespect to Mark Wallace.
No.
He's obviously got speed.
Absolutely.
But things were shaken up a little bit in qualies with the rain.
Yeah.
But it was a good ride from him.
But going back to the, you know, we're talking wheel size here, right? And it's now probably a decade since Jeff Stieber, owner of Intense, made a 29-inch wheel downhill bike. And
no one raced it for a long, long time.
They didn't. I mean, obviously, componentry such as tyres and forks, such things like that, were difficult. But it's only in the last 2 years that we've seen 29-inch wheel downhill bikes come on the World Cup circuit. You know, the Syndicate did it at Lourdes 2 years ago, they turned up with a whole fleet of 29 bikes. There was a massive kerfuffle. Oh, should they be doing this? Should they not be doing
that? Running around after that race, trying to make their own, or bodge their own.
Exactly. And you know what? I remember Danny Hart turned up before William with a 29-inch wheel bike. You know, it was bodged together last minute, and he didn't get on with it. The thing with 29-inch wheels, it takes a long time to adapt and change your timing to ride a 29-inch wheel bike, right?
So, well, yeah, for me, I think I'm just on that cusp of being tall enough to be able to ride it, although I've not ridden a 29 a downhill bike.
Yeah.
We've seen the mixed wheel bikes, of course, Danny Hart.
The mullets, as they call them.
I'm not sure I like the mullet bike's name for it, but Danny Hart running a smaller wheel on the back. We saw Giatin, actually, was it a couple of years ago at Fort William British National, get bucked over the bars because he stuck his arse in the back wheel.
Yeah.
And that takes a bit of getting used to. So for shorter ride, it's going to be harder. Mm. The new Specialized, running a big wheel up front. So Bruni and Finn Isles, Mick Hanna, Windmasters, and Fayol also running those mixed wheel bikes.
Yeah. It's funny, it's become, obviously, the UCI have allowed it this year as well, which is a really important point.
Interesting to see UCI moving their rules around. They're not something we're used to.
But you know what, you see, you know, we're talking the mixed wheel size, 29 front, 27.5 rear. You've got a lot of e-bikes at the moment, the likes of Canyon, Ghost,
I knew you Fantic. E-bikes.
Well, I have to because they've actually led the way with the mixed wheel size pretty much. So.
No, I actually do agree on that. Not many people running the smaller wheels still. 27.5, should we say. Smaller wheels, not 26 more.
But they ain't dead.
Troy Brosnan.
Yeah.
Adam Brayton.
Yeah.
I can't think who else, to be fair.
Remy
Tyrion.
Jack's in the mix now.
Yeah, Jack. Tyrion, one of my favourite riders, actually, Remy Tyrion.
Totally. You know, he won Val Nord back in... When did he win Val Nord? He won one World Cup.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when you talk about, you know, Loic Bruni's now won 3 World Cup races, right?
And 3 World Champs.
And 3 World Champs. Danny Hart has won 3 World Cup races. Amaury Piron won 3 World Cup races last year.
Yeah.
So they're all now on 3 in the trot. But it's almost coming back to what World Cup racing was back in the 1990s, the French, the British, and the Americans. I mean, Charlie, you know, there's like now three Americans in the top 10.
Yeah,
that's like happened overnight, right?
And it's been a while since that's happened.
Oh, totally.
But as far as French go, I think it's like definitely new school compared to, you know, the Nicos and your, who are Pascal, I suppose, would be one of the old school Frenchmen.
Yeah, Cedric Grass, yeah.
Yeah.
But do you know what's funny is that, you know, we're looking at the likes of Piron, Hart and Bruni as you know, the current superstars, which they are. But when you put it in the historic context, you know, they still don't even break in the top 10 of the most World Cup wins ever.
No.
So I think we're expecting a lot of these guys. Maybe we've been maybe a little too quickly, possibly.
Did you see the video with Bruni interviewing Piron?
No.
And they were talking about, not mentioning any names here, but they were talking about who inspired Piron, and I'm presuming it was old Frenchmen, and he was saying that when he got to know them, they weren't as nice as he had hoped they were. Yeah, I'm not naming any names here.
What the old French racers?
Well, possibly, yes.
I mean, when it comes to focus, you know, you look at the likes of Vullius and Barrel.
Yeah.
Focus like no other, really. And they probably learned a lot of things from those guys, you know, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Right, so did you have any favourites coming into the season? Of course, Aaron Guinzi, man.
I don't know where this comes from. You've got to respect someone who's raced raced 69 World Cups and he's won 20 of them.
You have got the stats, Steve Jones. You've got have you brought your blue book with you today?
I have brought the blue book, but let's not get into that. And you know, you look, it takes a long time to win World Cups, and it took Gwyn a while to work it out. And you might take the mic that I'm a Gwyn fan. I am a Gwyn fan because I'm a fan of anyone who can win a World Cup race, because it takes a special skill to be able to apply yourself and deliver that run under pressure. And,
yeah, of course.
And he worked it out. And I've got to respect a guy who can do that.
Totally. Coming into it, actually, I was really impressed with Matt Simmons. He's from my town of birth.
Matt Simmons or Matt Walker?
Matt Walker, sorry. Okay. Matt Simmons, I was just talking about thinking about the Cannondale. No, Matt Walker, sorry.
That's another talking point, is Matt Simmons and the new Cannondale bike, when we were talking tech and stuff like that.
Yeah, we will do. But Matt Walker, he's really built up over the years. I think.
Yeah.
Was he junior last year? But he was been well, doing really
for
last. Well.
I mean, basically, Finn Isles and Matt Walker, they raced together. But you know what?
One more, a lot more hype than the other, I think.
One with a lot more
hype. So I think Finn Isles, obviously, on the big team, Specialized.
Well, you say hype. I mean, Finn Iles in his last year juniors won every single race bar one. There's hype, there's facts on the ground, right?
So there was an IXS race at Maribor the week before the World Cup, and Matt Walker beat Danny Hart, and quite a few other notable races there. So he's definitely up to speed early in the year.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see what happens there.
That's an interesting point, actually, Don. If you think that, you know, Danny Hart and Matt Walker, that's a really, really strong team. Really two good mechanics behind them as well.
Wow.
And then you've got, what do you mean, well?
My next point would be, they're managed by Will Longdon, my ex-team manager. I'm thinking he must be starting to get worried, because at the end of the year, if it's going like this, they won't be able to afford those two guys, I don't think.
Right. Should we talk money, should we? But you go on to, but what I was going to say was a really strong team, Danny Hart and Matt Walker. And then obviously you've got Loic Bruni and Finn Iles.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great specialised team as well. So it must be
very strong.
They probably help each other. I don't know, what's the dynamic going to be like in a team? Like, I mean, you've been on many World Cup teams.
I mean, I've always found it pretty difficult when, especially if you have an insight as to how much your teammate might be getting paid. And then if you beat them, you would feel like you're getting underpaid. So there's definitely competition. First rule of racing is beat your teammate. So it's a difficult one, especially when I'm thinking of Saracen. I don't know how much they're getting paid, but I would imagine Danny Hart's getting paid a lot more than Matt Walker.
Yeah, but Saracen have done well, though. They've built that brand up in the last decade.
And they've supported Matt Walker a lot over the years, actually.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What about the ladies? It looks to me like coming into the season, I would always have said it's going to be a two-horse race between Rach and Tahni. Bit of that sort of question no one knew the answer to is, how good is the Athlon bike going to be for Rach?
Yeah.
And it's hard to win there. If Rach doesn't win the race, then everyone's going to say, oh, it's the bike. If Rach does win the race, then everyone's saying, oh, it's Rach. She always wins races.
Yeah, I mean, it's very bold of them to make their own bike company, the Athens.
Yeah.
But then I'm thinking, is it a distraction? You know, when you've got the likes of Trek or Specialized behind you, that's one thing, and it takes a huge team to develop a bike and manage things. So I'm wondering if is it a distraction? I don't know.
Well, who's done it in the past? Nico's done it.
Nico's done it.
Literally,
yeah,
from the ground up, made their own bike. There aren't many,
I think,
high class World Cup races that have done it.
No, and he was incredibly successful on it as well.
He didn't ride it for very long, though, did he?
3 years.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, 3 years on the V process.
Right.
I mean, you know, he won World Cup Series, he won World Championships on that bike. I mean, Don, come on, you cannot forget 2002 when he hadn't raced all year, and he turns up from the last race of the year, the World Championships, and Petey and everyone was there to win the race. Willis comes down, boom.
Where was that? Caprun?
Caprun, that was, yeah.
Well, he was a one-off, I think, to be fair.
But going back to the women's racing, I think Tahni, I mean, last year Rachel won, did she win three of the seven last year?
I think
she won three of the seven races last year.
Yeah, it was fairly tight in overall.
The year before, 2017. 2016, sorry, she won everything in 2016.
Yeah, right.
Actually, okay. That was on a, she won actually 13 races on the trot.
Yeah.
I mean, that is mental, but I sense a little bit that Tahni has actually made inroads into her.
I think Tahni looks in real good shape this year. Yeah. She's riding really well. Qualies went down. Tracy Hannah actually was fastest. It was Rach, then Tahni. But I think qualies at the first race of the year is, it's a nervous time for a lot of the riders. So I think it's always going to be reflective of the actual result.
Hmm.
We saw it in men's. Obviously, Wallace first, Gwyn second, Finn Iles third.
I think Gwyn is confident after that qualifier. But then I'd say Gwyn was confident, and Bruni didn't, at least he didn't come across as being very confident, Bruni on camera. And,
we're talking about bikes, though. Gwyn had two identical bikes at the race, a large and an XL. And he was chopping between them, not deciding on which one he wanted to race on.
Right.
From my point of view, that can't help, surely.
It can't help. That brings me back to 2013. So Gwyn had obviously been the most brilliant World Cup racer ever for 2 years, 2011, 2012, when he ran for Trek. Then there was the departure to Specialized, and when he went to Specialized, he actually went to a medium or a large size bike. Obviously, what he hadn't done was test different size Specialized demos over the winter. He turns up, first World Cup of the year, and he's down in 27th place or something like that. He goes to Val d'Isol, second race of the year. He swaps bike sizes. I happened to be at that race because it was where Olin's launched their shock, and he actually took my size XL off me. I was trying out at the time, and he came back, and I think he was like top 10 that weekend. But yeah, you can't really be messing around with bike sizes on race weekends.
It's been underprepared, surely. If you're showing up to a race with two bikes, I don't know, but I'm not Aaron Gwynn, but to me, that is not being prepared for a race.
I'd probably agree with you there, Don. But I'm not, you know, we're not Aaron Gwynn. No. He obviously knows what he's doing.
True. There's a couple of shocks in qualies. So Minar did not qualify for his first World Cup race in 20 years, shame, which I find that hard to believe.
It's honestly, it's, I mean, that guy, I mean, he's 38.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's the same age as me, and he started racing World Cups before I did. I can't believe he's still there. It's pretty crazy. Still at the top, pretty much.
Yeah.
And so he broke his arm last year, didn't he? So he missed a load of races, so unprotected. So those top riders from last year are protected. So if anything goes wrong, they still make it to the final, which it makes such a difference.
I mean, you could almost argue to make an exception for someone like Greg Minar, couldn't you?
I don't know, obviously.
Yeah,
racing's racing.
I think it's a real shame that, you know, one of the icons of the sport couldn't race. And I'm sure he would have, you know, I'm sure he's still a podium possibility, Don, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. There's definitely a new guard appearing in World Cup Down.
I want to pick up on that. right? Everyone talks about this new generation, right?
Yeah.
Well, they do. Everyone talks about new generation. It took, you look at Bruni, Piron and Hart, right? They are 25, 28 and 24 respectively, right?
Right, okay.
It took Bruni 6 years to win a World Cup race. It took Danny Hart 8 years to win a World Cup race.
Yeah.
And it took Piron. Piron's now in his fifth year, and it took him 4 years to get in there. And I'm not sure, you know, I think we expect too much of this new generation.
But they are bumping down some of these guys, like Minar and G, should we say?
Possibly. I mean, I don't know.
Anyway. Danny Hart was lucky to be protected in qualifying because he did not have a good qualifier. I forget where he was, but he was way out of there. Wynn did not qualify, not protected.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a shake up there.
Yeah. But going back to this new generation, right? what I'm going to say is, like I said, Hart, Piron and Bruni, you know, they're 20, 26, 28. Greg Minar, who a lot of people talk about as the greatest downhill racer of all time, even though maybe Nico Vulio's won more world championships and more World Cup series.
How old was Nico when he retired? This shocked 20, me.
I think he's 25,
that
right?
That's ridiculous.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? When we're going back to this new generation, Greg Minar had only won 4 World Cups for the time he was 27, right? And he went on to become, you know, this... It's, you know, one of the greatest ever races.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
So people forget these things. Everyone thinks the likes of Matt Walker and Finn Arles, they're going to come in, they're going to win World Cups in their first year. That's just not going to happen. You know, they didn't win last year. I'd imagine they will podium and possibly win this year.
I think Finn Arles has got a win in him this year.
Right. Anyway, it has to. You know, when you look historically, the likes of, you know, Vulio's, Sam Hill, you know, they were winning World Cup races in the first two years.
Back in my day, there was no Junior World Cup, and a junior was expected, if they're any good, to get in the top 20, top 30 in the overall World Cup, which we talk about actually with the ladies. Valley Hall won all the Junior World Cups last year.
Yeah.
And lots of people, she's in her second year this year again in Junior World Cup. So everyone starts talking about how would she go in the women's.
I think she'd have been top 5, right?
No, she would have been eighth.
Eighth.
So that's not, I mean, it's good, but in the women's, it looks to me like a 2-horse race this year.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Tracy Hannah will be in there.
She's there, but what were the times? It was much closer. There was 0.85 between Rach and Tani, but then it was back 2.5 to Tracy.
Right.
And then there's a bit more of a jump to Caribou and Harashnik. So it feels like there's a two or one.
It's quite good,
two.
The Slovenian Harashnik. How do you pronounce Harashnik?
Harashnik, I believe.
I mean, it's great to a local was in the top 5 there, isn't it?
Did you see how on the run, so Tani and Rach were like back and forth, green and red, green and red, green and red, and it went down to the line, Tani took it.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Oh, totally. And do you think then, it's this confidence game, right, Don? And
I feel a slight shift.
In the last 2 years?
I don't know Tani that well, to be fair. Rach, I think, has
always
been... You
know Rach quite well.
I do. Some ancient history there. But I think she...
2005, right?
Well, something like that, probably. Yeah, I can't remember. But it sort of swings with her. Her confidence is either sky high or it's really low. I think I find it a bit crazy that she isn't more confident all the time, because she can always win a World Cup race. I think she's in the right state of mind, she will always win it. Well, it has always been that way. Maybe not this year. So it's interesting to see.
What I'm thinking about with the whole female, with the women's class, is that Rachel... you know, will she beat Anne-Caroline Chausson's record of 41 World Cup wins?
I don't think so.
I mean, well, she's on, she's actually on 37.
Wow.
That's, yeah. I mean, four more wins and she becomes arguably the greatest downhill racer ever, right?
Yeah, true.
I mean, maybe she hasn't won the same World Championships as Anne-Caroline, but yeah. I mean, 41 World Cup wins.
Anne-Caro, in her day, was unbeatable, really.
Yeah.
She was a step ahead of all of them.
Yeah.
She got beaten by only on her worst days, I would have thought.
I think Anne-Caroline raced 52 World Cups.
Yeah.
And she won 41. Jack, what are you going to say about that?
Insane.
Yeah.
Rachel's been racing now World Cups for 15 years, Don.
Yeah.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It's a long time.
I mean, obviously not the same as Minard, who's been racing 21 World Cup for years. Do you get tired? Do you get tired of it?
I think you get... The challenge is, I think, fades a little bit if you've done it so many times. If you've been to Fort William 25 times. In fact, I've probably raced Fort William 25 times just through BDS and World Cup. So, yeah, for me, the motivation faded slightly.
I mean, it's tough enough. I mean, how many years have you been to Fort William for GMBN? 5 years?
Five, yeah, probably.
It's tough enough being, doing that role, right?
It's much more fun doing it from this side of the tape, to be honest. Fort William was a brilliant race, but I actually hated the track. But the actual race was amazing because the crowd just turned it on.
Yeah.
So actually when you're riding top to bottom, it was fun. But the whole getting up there, practicing, did not enjoy that very much, to be fair.
It's a tough old place in Fort William. And it's the next round, actually.
Next round, yeah.
In a
month to wait, yeah. What about you going back to the men's race? So Matt Walker put in an early run, super fast. Mm. Obviously won the IXS. Danny Hart put 1.2 into him, which looked pretty strong at the time.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it was great watching it on TV. You know? You can actually see. I think when Hart came down, it was like, this is happening.
That looks almost unbeatable. And Warner talked about it. The rock section, I think Danny was the fastest.
It was insane, wasn't it? Yeah. Wow. And when you walk that rock section, it does not look like it does. It's ridiculous.
It's deadly. Don't
totally.
Fall off there at your own risk.
Yeah, but you know, I think it comes back to it takes that. That's what it takes to win a World Cup race, and you can see it visually on the screen. Those tires are pushing the edge, but you can't push them too much.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Actually, so Fearon went straight through the rocks, a different line. So it looked slow. On the exit to the fire road, and he lost a load of time there. Yeah. So on the easiest part of the whole track, basically, if you don't exit that rock section fast, you're going to lose a whole load of time.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to think about, stringing those sections together. Brooke McDonald was wild, as we'd expect, really, McDonald.
I think one of our colleagues thought Brooke would win the race, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom Grundy, yeah. Thought. I mean, he's always there to win races, and the lozenge, or however you pronounce it, last year, he qualified fastest and went down like a big bag of nails.
Yeah. I think his teammate, Laurie Greenland, I think he looked fast as well.
Yeah.
I think, but what I'm trying to say is, I think Hart looked incredibly fast, and Bruni looked ridiculously fast.
He did. I think Bruni is the best looking rider on a bike. I think he just looks great riding that bike. The bike fits him, it works.
Yeah.
But we're talking about bikes. That bike was brand new this year to him. So
but look at the. I mean, him and his mechanic. They've done so much data recording.
I was
going to
say
that bike.
They're one of the teams that really go into data acquisition.
Yeah,
I mean, many of them do. Danny Hart does actually.
Yeah, but I think Loic and his mechanic engineer, they're obsessed with it.
Yeah,
you know, what were they talking about? The level of detail and how much pressure they put on their brakes and things like that.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, I'm shocked that Bruni's actually taken several years to get his head round 29-inch wheel up front. I'd have thought that he'd been testing it a lot.
Do you think they would run 29 a rear if they could fit him? Can they fit him on that bike? I'm not sure. Actually.
Well, I'm sure they'll make anything fit, won't they?
Yeah, I don't know. So I thought it was an uncharacteristic run from G. when you saw him hit the fire road, he wasn't stood up sprinting like you see G. He finished 26th.
Right.
Bit poor by, well, very poor by G standards. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
Laurie Greenland was interesting. Talking about styles of riding, he seems to have a strange upward pedaling style.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But then when you see him when he's freewheeling, coasting down through sections, he is, like, I think he is one of the most stylish riders.
Yeah, true.
I mean, it comes back to, you know, we talked to Martin Ashton earlier.
Yeah.
About was one wheel size better than another wheel size on the Maribor course. I think it's profit and loss all the way down the hill, right?
I think if you actually look at top five, it is a real split between 29ers and the mixed wheel bikes and 27.5.
I mean, basically, it's down to how the rider interprets the terrain going down there, what parts of the ground they're going to pump, because that's where you get speed.
Yeah.
On a hill like that, you're basically not pedaling. And that's what's great about it, I think. You know, you want to see World Cup races. You don't want to see them pedaling down.
But it's not super steep, though. So you are working. Like I said, there's a lot of pumping going on that race.
Yeah, it's a total all-body workout, right, Dan?
Yeah.
And you've ridden it loads of times.
Yeah,
so.
I love that place. Perrion looked strong, but he did lose little bits pretty much the whole way down his run. Bruni obviously put in that super strong run to take the win. He was up, took it by 0.4, which is a reasonable gap, I suppose, to Danny. One of the surprises for me actually was Charlie Harrison riding that Trek.
This is it. That's, like I said, you know, the Americans seem to have arrived overnight.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to that other question we talked about earlier, which was the new generation. We've seen eras in World Cup racing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at it, there's always been an era. There's been the Vullius era, there's been the Peat era, there's been the Hill era, the Minar era, and the Gwyn era. And my question is, do you think we're going to see a new era, and who might it be? Or maybe we will not see a new era.
I don't think we will, personally. I think it's just so, well, it's always tight. I know everyone always says, oh, it's so tight this year. It's always been tight.
Yeah.
But you're right, there have been eras. I just think at the moment, anyone could win, and there is 10 people there.
Exactly.
Well, so when we're doing our little WhatsApp group to begin with, I was like, well, no one can predict, because it's so close. You can potentially
I think you will find that I predicted that Bruni would win.
I thought, okay. But we were talking top fives, and of course, anyone could be there. I wouldn't bet.
And we both predicted that it would be Bruni, Hart, and Perrion would be in that top five.
Yeah, it's first actually year that Danny Hart's had a good opener.
Yeah,
it's the first year that Gwyn has not won. Four of the last five opening rounds, he's won.
Yeah, I think Gwyn will be seriously disappointed with that.
Sixth place.
That's not what he was paid to do, right?
Well, that's what we're talking about. He was quite open about saying that he thought it was worth $1 million. Sixth place is not worth $1 million.
No, but I think if you go back to when he signed for YT, right? I mean, that was allegedly $1 million deal, right?
Yeah, well, I think he said, didn't he?
What is Gwyn worth it? Of course he's worth it, because if you're a team and you want to endorsement of your product, right?
Yeah.
Back 2-3 years ago, Gwyn was the only person you would put money on to win a World Cup race.
So what you're
hands down.
So what you're saying is Gwyn was worth $1 million. He's not anymore.
Well, I bet you he'll have learnt a lot from that race. And as he said so himself on Instagram, actually, that didn't go as he wanted it to, but he's learnt a lot.
Yeah.
And
of course, it's only the first race of the year.
First race of the year, but he's not going to be happy with that at all. And as are the other riders who maybe didn't perform, like
Vergier. Bad weekend for Santa Cruz.
Now this is another thing, right? It's not good. It's not good to go down crashing, right? You can crashing can become a habit, and you don't want to be doing that.
Especially if we're talking confidence, it's a big part of the game. And on the first race of the year,
yeah.
I mean, I did it back in the day. I'd had a good, quite good very first year. And then the second year, I was like, right, hyped up. And I
exactly
did not qualify for two or three in a row.
But how do you know where, obviously, is Isles going to be like out to prove something at Fort William? There's a danger of pushing too hard.
So I'm trying to be devil's advocate here, but I was going to say, Finn Isles, was he riding like a junior? Overriding like a junior? You know, we see him hyped up, they want to perform, and then boom. So, like, someone who qualifies first and then crashes.
Yeah, I mean, you don't.
he crashed in what looked like a fairly easy spot. Who knows?
It was very rooty.
Yeah.
But, and the same with Virgier as well. Virgier's crashed a few times.
That was a big one. You see, it was kind of weird. Like, he pedalled hard and then he cruised along the end of the fire road to try and save a bit of energy, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it almost looked like he did misjudge the speed.
Took his eye off the game.
And slapped his back wheel into that tree. Sam Hill crashed there.
Did he?
That one there, 2010.
I didn't know that.
I remember that bit being fast and the ground drops away from you. So lucky to not get hurt in a pretty big crash. So what about the rest of Santa Cruz? Lucas Shaw did not race.
That's a shame, really. Because Lucas Shaw, last year he qualified first in quite a few World Cups last year.
Yeah, three, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, he's a great kid.
And, yeah. Yeah, I think he'll.
He'd be another one of the Americans. You've got Charlie Harrison, you got Lucas Shaw, the Americans, and you've got the three French.
Yeah.
And you've got two strong Brits. Like I said, it's back to the 90s. I think it's going to be interesting year, actually. It'd be interesting to see if someone does. Obviously, someone's going to dominate somewhere. Who's it going to be, though?
I think Finars will win a race before the end of the year.
Right.
But we'll see.
Jack, can you record that? Actually, we are recording this.
Yes, of course we are. What about Gwyn's run then? So he lost a big chunk mid-track and then was consistently slower. Lost time every split to Bruni.
Overconfidence? Gwyn always looks smooth, doesn't he? Same as Brosnan. Whereas the likes of Hart and Bruni, they always look slightly where those tyres are pushing a bit too much.
Yeah, true. Although I can't remember many Danny Hart crashes. I'm probably wrong. My memory's not brilliant.
I don't know. Gwyn's run. It was still a bloody good run, right? He's still only 2 seconds off, right?
What was the time?
Yeah,
it's 1.6 back.
1.6 seconds. It's nothing, is it?
It is. It's tight at the top. But he's not used to be down in sixth, that's for sure. what are your takeaways from this race? Mine is there's people messing with bikes. Gwyn messing around with a large neck set arm. Rach said she did some big changes to her suspension in the morning of the race. I just think it's not a great time to be doing those things.
Is there an argument to say that certain bikes are good for certain tracks?
I don't know, because if you talk about Gwyn dominating, his bike can't have been good everywhere in those years. So it's the rider overcomes those things.
I mean, I think you adapt to a bike and your timing is adapted to that. It doesn't take long to adapt to a new bike, but I think mid-race is probably not the place to be doing that.
Are we going to talk about Loic Bruni's trousers?
Oh, of course, the clothing. Of course. Let's talk clothing.
They looked like they were shorts, but they weren't. They were trousers.
I want to cast your mind back to Maribor 2000 when Petey actually raced it in a full skin suit with no peak.
No peak. And Warner said in the commentary that he'd never raced without a peak. I'm sure.
Warner definitely has raced without a peak. I'm going to have to dig some photographs. But you know what was really funny? It was like the French hollers got blasted for being the ones with skin suits and no peak. Yeah, in that race, I think Petey was in a skin suit and no peak, whereas Vuillaz was actually in baggy clothes and a visor. And I think Petey beat. But yeah, definitely the tight clothes have come back.
Trousers are super tight. I mean, I think the kits look good.
I think so, yeah.
So nothing wrong with that.
But, Piron apparently is wearing Miriam Nicole's trousers.
Yeah, apparently. Did you see Vergier lost his peak in that crash? Never a good look running the bullet.
Loads of people are in tight kit.
I think the roadie says that anything over 20 kilometers an hour, it makes a difference. So the average speed,
what was the average speed there?
I don't know, but speed trap was 58? Like 52 or something, isn't it?
Yeah, 58 kilometers an hour. They're not hanging about, are they?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's going to make a difference. Aero will make a difference. So, yeah. Are we going to see the UCI relax their rules on aero on the bike?
They've relaxed the rules on mullet, so maybe clothing's the next one.
I think the wheel size debate is still raging because there is a real mix, especially in the men's. Well, women's, it's 29ers were second place. Tani Rice 27.5. But in the men's, it was a mix of the mixed bikes and 27 and 29. So jury's out on that. Fort William is coming up in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what's happening with that.
I think that'll be the turning point, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, I can't wait for the rest of the season now. Definitely whet my appetite for more World Cup races.
Yeah, I love it. Love every single minute of it. And I think it's actually good watching it on TV, right?
Yeah, the coverage is better than ever.
Yeah, I think the coverage was really good, actually, on the
being
weekend.
Being able to watch it live is amazing.
Yeah.
So I think that's time to wrap up the podcast. The next podcast will be in a couple of weeks. We've got the Enduro World Series in Madeira. And then shortly after that, I think it's Albstadt for the first World Cup cross country. So we'll be getting some experts in the studio to chat about those. But yeah, thanks for joining us for the first ever mountain bike podcast. Find it on Spotify, on Google, and on iTunes soon. And of course, on our YouTube channel.